Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Week in Review, bringing you news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. In this, the October 11th, 2009 edition of the program, we'll talk about Antonio Casanova's show that may not happen, Marco Tempest and his new feud with the Twins, another feud between Jerry McCambridge and Luke Germain, and stay tuned later to hear if 19 years old is too young to open a Vegas show. Here to help me with all of this is a man who is not only a wellspring of knowledge of all things magic industry, but is also a really cool guy and someone we are pleased to call a friend, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Kenner. How you doing, buddy?
Good, good. How's it going?
Ah, it's fantastic. It's great to have you back on the podcast.
It's good to be here. I'm in lovely, I'm on tour with David Copperfield. We're in lovely Richmond, Virginia.
Yes.
Yeah, my hotel window to a parking lot, and I don't know. It looks like a zombie movie is being filmed outside because there is no one on the streets. So, you know, I'm expecting...
Just desolate?
Like I'm expecting the Walking Dead to walk around at any moment, and I have my door boarded up just in case, so I'm good.
There we go. Keep canned foods and shotguns at,
exactly.
At arm's length at all times here in Richmond.
Yeah, cardio.
All right. Well, before we get started, I want to remind everybody that this episode, along with every episode, is brought to you by TrickShopMagic.com. Again, TrickShopMagic.com is your one-stop magic shop online, bringing you the brick-and-mortar experience to the worldwide webs. And as we've reminded you for the past couple weeks, please, everybody, follow at TrickShopMagic on Twitter. Not only are they going to give you all the newest effects as they release, they're going to let you know via the whole Twitter sphere there, but also you're able to win free things. And if there's one thing that magicians love more than anything, Chris, right, it is free things.
That's for sure. Like free tickets. God knows I get enough people asking for that.
There we go. So please go to TrickShotMagic.com, run by the fine Sam Blankenship. He knows how to bring that brick-and-mortar experience because they're running a brick-and-mortar store there in Old City, Temecula, California. So if you're around that neck of the woods, stop by. And otherwise, TrickShotMagic.com and at TrickShotMagic on Twitter. Check them out. Antonio Casanova's new show at the Greek Isles may be done before it begins after the equipment he was planning on using was removed from the theater by the previous resident, Antonio Restivo's show, Ignite. Now his backers and the Isles are rumored to be at odds over who has to provide replacement equipment, which could mean the show will never happen, which is actually the rumor that we got. The thing that came into iTricks headquarters was this thing was done. The show was stillborn. Casanova responded to a request for comment and said it was going to happen, and the show will be better than ever. He predicted maybe Halloween is when the show would make its debut. Chris, you spend, I would say the majority of your time figuring out the logistics of maybe the biggest magic show on the planet. Is this kind of a rookie mistake by Casanova and his backers to get into this situation?
Well, I mean, I don't know about rookie mistake or just mistake. I don't really know. There's too many Antonios is probably the problem.
I know. God, it's not like it's not like it's John Smith.
Right. See, John Smith and Bill Jenkins.
it's the Antonios.
It's the Antonios.
It's like, there's a problem because Antonio took his equipment. Oh, but no, but Antonio's the one coming in. No, the other Antonio.
Well,
who's on first?
I don't know anything about the situation, but if Antonio Casanova was going into a show and assuming that he was going to be using the props that were there to beguile,
yeah,
and he did not have that in writing, that is not a rookie mistake. That's just a mistake. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not sure what he was promised. Who knows? Maybe he was promised. Oh, you'll get the. He may have been promised all this. I just think that, you know, in the future, I'm sure he'll get it in writing. You've got to be careful in situations like this because if you get into a problem where you think, you know, boy, they promised me this, but if this doesn't happen, you need to really think through the backup plan. Which I don't want to second guess Antonio Casanova and say he did something wrong, but
yeah,
you know, it sounds like he was either misled,
which happens, right?
Very,
I mean, to be fair,
yes. Like I would assume that was all not, you know, that was the previous owner's stuff. I mean, I think, you know, Tracy, who's in that? Stacey Jones is in that show, right?
I'm not sure.
And yeah, I saw the show. It's,
okay, so she is.
So some of that stuff could have been hers. I mean, who's to say who owned all that stuff? He used a lot of that. He did that ice, fire and ice show or whatever it was also. And I think he used some of the same props. So, you know, I would just assume it was all his. I mean, how many shows, think about it like this. Again, I don't know what Antonio Castello was promised. But how many shows are going to say, all right, come in here. I want you to come over here and do the show. We're going to give you all the props and all the stuff and everything you need to do the show. You don't have to bring a thing. Just yourself and your small, you know, your stand-up, your in-one tricks, and then the rest we'll provide. And that just really never happened. So it just sounds a little odd. I think there's more to the story than we know. That's basically what I would say. If he just assumed it and he was promised that, he did make a mistake by not getting it in writing. And
yeah,
then maybe he did get it in writing and they're just reneging. Who knows? You know, there's a chance that, you know, Antonio Casanova is the one that's, you know, kind of being screwed. He could have done all the right things and made no mistake, and he's just getting, you know, screwed. So,
well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this kind of stuff is not, you know, the craziest story ever told when it comes to staging of any show, right? You know, that
right.
there are promises made. And like you said, listen, you got to get things in writing. And even sometimes when it's in writing, it's not, you know, going to be carried out by the person who promised it to you. So
you need to be prepared.
Yeah. If anything, it's like, you know, and it's hard because, you know, when news comes in to us, we got to report it. But at the same time, I certainly wouldn't be 100% sure that we're getting the full story here. It's likely just a snapshot of maybe even something in negotiation that has yet to reach its full resolution there.
Well, you know, if anything, you know, I've never heard of Antonio Casanova or his show. So at least now I know that he has a show in Vegas coming up, possibly. So
there we go.
If anything, this has given people a little bit of knowledge about him.
You should check out the poster. But it's my favorite new one sheet in Vegas. It's him kind of just sultrily kissing a lady's back.
Yes, I see it right now, and it's it says master magician, which I love that term. I just love the term master magician. It just, what the hell does that mean?
I don't know about magician, but he sure seems like a master of kissing lady back. Seems like he's pretty good at that.
But maybe those are his backers.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, he's certainly good at those backers. Hey there, folks. I just want to take this time out of the podcast to remind you that Bullets After Dark is the new 2-disc DVD from the incredible mind of John Bannon, featuring everything from self-workers that'll fool you to deviously constructed sleight-of-hand routines. It's 3 hours of stunning magic. And if you pre-order before November 4th at bigblindmedia.com, you'll receive 2 totally exclusive free items today. You ain't gotta wait for when the DVD comes out. You're gonna get them in the mail post-haste here, folks. You're gonna get the Open and Notorious Bannon's ebook on the Open Prediction, and Chain Gang, a brand new collector's routine from Bannon himself. It's only at www.bigblindmedia.com. Again, bigblindmedia.com. Bullets After Dark from John Bannon. Get it immediately or spend the rest of your adulthood crying. Marco Tempest is calling out the UK act The Twins for video tricks that look very much like his Forced Perspective cell phone magic clips, which have been hits not only on YouTube, but iTunes as well. Tempest told iTrix that he tried to confront the duo backstage at the World Magic Awards taping where they were both performing, but they claimed they'd come up with the ideas independently of Tempest. Chris,
yeah,
are Forced Perspective effects in the public domain enough that this is no issue, or is it a sticky situation for the Twins?
Well, I mean, it's Forced Perspective stuff has obviously been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So, but the way that Marco uses it, Marco is at what he does in doing this, he is a genius. He's very smart. He's a great business person. He really understands why he does it, what he does, who it's for. This guy's really got it together. And for somebody to take his hard work, if you look at what they're doing, it is his hard work.
Yes.
And if they came up with it independently, I mean, it's not like they made a box, the thing with the box on the ground. It's not like they made a version that was the box was at a different angle, and you know, it was obvious that they may have thought of it themselves. Or they, it's exact. And they kind of present it the same way. If they didn't see it, or someone didn't see it and explain it to them, you know, I think Marco has all the right in the world to be upset.
You know, I think whenever we get into issues like this, it always boils down to how much of it is method and how much of it is choreography that seems to be duplicated. And I think the thing that's kind of damning in this perspective, in this particular example, is that it's kind of both, you know, like the method is the same, and literally just even the movements and the hand gestures are, you know, you watch them back to back as this video that was put together shows it, and whew, it's hard to say that these things are different at all, except one has this, you know, the twins, and one has Marco.
Well, the thing that I think that Marco can lose rest a little bit of ease is, Marco is so far ahead of everybody else in this field and in this thought process that for them to catch up, they're going to steal everything he's got. I mean, I don't think that.
Well, and even then, it's like, you know, that's the beautiful thing about the internet is that, you know, this kind of thing comes up. If all of a sudden, you know, these things look the same, at least it's a conversation, you know? It's out there in the public eye, and if you are just ripping somebody off, then, the conversation is going to reach the conclusion that you rip Tempest off.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not even a touchy subject. It's just such an interesting dilemma, because that... This is part of, unfortunately, our business. You know, people see something. It's like they monkey see, monkey do. You know, they see it. Ooh, I could use that. That would be great for my certain thing I've got to do. Or if they're doing it on TV, or if someone says, let's say a TV producer comes up to these kids and says, hey, I want you to do something like this. In their brain, they might think, well, it's the only way I'm going to ever get on TV. I'll have to do it. You know,
yeah.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, but yeah, I think Marco, he totally has a right to be upset about that. They completely, you know, hey, here, look at it like this. The bullet catch has been done a zillion times.
Yeah.
If someone came up and figured out Penn and Teller's bullet catch, which probably they won't, and they decided to try to do it and did it just like that, presentation-wise, I would think that Penn and Teller would be mad. And
yes.
Have all the right to be mad. And I think the Magic Committee would jump around and go, they were mad, you know, they should have done that. They should have at least acknowledged. There is no way that you can tell me that they did that, made that, and no one pointed out to them that it was like Marco's thing.
Yeah, kind of unique to that. Now, yeah. let me ask you this. Let's say that the right after this goes out, the twins say, listen, this sage and wise Chris Kenner seems to know how the world works, and they call you up and they say, how can we make this right? What would your advice be to them?
Well, I mean, I'll give an example of something that just happened with me.
Okay.
So I put out an iPhone app, the Rising Card.
Yep.
And I had it actually in Apple for, I don't know, over a month trying to get it approved. It took, they actually have said no. So during this process, like at the very end, like days before I finally am realizing it's going to finally get approved, I hear that Penn and Teller have an app, which I knew that they had an app for now, and that it used a method very similar to my trick. So
yeah.
I did the right thing immediately. I'm like, well, you know, hey, I know these guys. I know both of them. I don't want them thinking I ripped them off. I don't, you know, want to think they ripped me off, because I don't think they would, and don't think that's not their nature, you know. So I called Teller and said, hey, look, I have this thing. It's already approved, basically. It's already on its way. Here's my method. And he said, well, holy cow, that's similar to mine. Now, mine obviously has a little different. You know the two tricks. Mine has... is a little bit different than theirs, and it's visually different, which makes
third party, all things being equal, yours is better. As a guy who bought both.
Okay, I don't want to say it like that.
No,
but
I will. That's Justin Young of iTrix.
Well, for me, it's if you look at the two tricks next to each other, the method is exactly the same on all.
Yes.
But you can see where it's a pretty, to me, it's kind of an obvious idea. It's a good idea. But if you're thinking on that line, it's a pretty obvious idea. And theirs, by looking at it, you can see that they didn't just see mine and rip me off, or I didn't just see theirs and rip them off, because we both went different directions. With not the outcome, but with the method.
Yeah.
You know, theirs looks a little different. Mine looks a little different. And to me, it's kind of obvious. I look at them and go, well, they're obviously kind of independent. Yet they're almost the same thing. So when I called Teller, you know, I said, hey, Teller, you know, here's my next trick, which I was just about to submit, was a text message trick. And it was actually the first trick that I'd come up with a year ago, almost. And I've changed that trick quite a bit. And it's not a card trick. It's completely different. Idea. It's nothing like their text message trick. So, you know, that obviously brought a red flag up to Teller because they were putting theirs out in a few weeks. And I could have very easily, mine was done in a can. I could have very easily put my text message trick out before theirs came and beat them to the punch. But what good does that do? You know, who cares? You know, I don't want to, you know, they have this kind of fanfare thing they were doing that they were promoting it with.
Yeah, they're doing the whole TechCrunch 50.
Yeah, so, you know, I just sat on mine, and I'm going to put it out of, I'll let it die down. Their trick, you know, die down a little bit, let them have get all the sales and all the stuff that they initial juice out of it. And I'll put mine out, and you know, I'm sure I won't sell as many as I would have, but, you know, I didn't hurt my relationship with these guys. That's the key, you know, for me.
Yeah, yeah, and even, I think, on a business level, there is a benefit from differentiating your products and making sure that, you know, yours retains a unique kind of quality that demands a consumer to buy it.
Right. And it is what it is. But yeah, I thought with those guys, they should have at some point called and told Marco what they were doing. And if they would have said the truth and said, if the truth to them is, look, we came up with this independently 100%. I never even saw your stuff. I don't have a computer. I don't even have a phone.
We live on a secluded island.
We live in Siberia and not allowed to speak.
We were flying from Australia to Los Angeles, and we crash landed on an island with a hatch, and we've been cut off from society. But we came up with this forced perspective stuff.
So, I mean, I just think they may have, at some point, they had to have heard about it, had to have, and should have called. That's all. Just call and, you know something? Hey, if the worst case scenario when they called would have been, Marco said, I don't like it, I don't appreciate it, don't do it, and Marco would have been upset.
Yeah.
That's no different than the situation they're in right now.
What's happening right now.
So, you might as well have got it up front. I mean, the only thing that would have done for them is if they thought that was what was going to happen, you know, then Marco would have had some chance to, you know,
get out ahead of it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, moving from one feud to another, it was a week of beefs here on iTrix. Jerry McCambridge in our Magic Stars podcast this week took aim at fellow Las Vegas mentalist Luke Germain. Chief among his issues is the name of Germain's show, Mental, which he believes is deliberately confusing since his show is called Mentalist. Chris Kenner, are these names too close?
You know, I know both parties. And,
yes.
You know, the problem, it's hard to say. You know, it's like when I first heard it, I thought, you know, it doesn't matter. It's not, it's two different casinos. It's hard to have an opinion on this. I mean, my opinion is kind of that they're, it's weird. It's mental and mentalist. I mean,
yeah,
I can see where maybe that people can get confused, but at the same token, you know, we're not talking about a show on the level of Ka and Cirque du Soleil. These are, you know, small venue shows.
True. In those no smaller venue shows, I mean, you would know far more than I would, you know, 5, 10, 15 people make a lot bigger a difference than, you know, car or something, right?
Very, you know? That is very true. Yeah, someone's going to pay full ticket price on that. Yeah.
So if you're losing to confusion, you know, maybe one, two, three people, eventually that kind of adds up.
You know, and I think that maybe if the reality of it is that if it's really true, now, if it's just one person that has brought a ticket, because I heard this argument that you can get, Anthony Cool, so I guess used to work with Jerry.
Yeah, yeah.
He has a two-for-one thing, so if you see his show, the other, whatever the show is, Freaks or whatever it's called. So what's it called?
Well, Anthony Cool has his mental, or his hypnotism show, rather.
His hypnotism show, not the Freaks show also, yeah.
No, right. There's also a combo deal between Freaks and mental. But the one specifically that Jerry talked about was Cool's, on a hypnotism show, offers, hey, if you really like this show, go see this other guy. His name is Luke Tremay. It's the show Mental. And if you bring my ticket, you get in for X amount of money. Or I think Jerry mentioned that now it's free or something. And people will bring those Anthony Cool's tickets to Jerry's show, thinking that that's,
well, if that's
the Luke
true,
show.
If that's really true, I mean, honestly, then, you know, Anthony Cools, who produces Luke's show, she should stand up and say, okay, well, that's not good. I want to change that. We need to fix this and not argue about the name. If that's actually a true statement and it really does happen, I mean, if I was Anthony, and I mean, this is just my thought, this is the way we would do stuff here.
Yeah. Yeah.
If someone said that to me and said every night, people come every night and they bring those tickets to here. If I were Anthony, I would have, you know, or Luke, I would have, you know, somebody go to their box office, Jerry's box office, stand around and see if it actually happens.
Ah, so you're saying maybe a little.
Well,
little
no, just see how much
research.
See if it's really.
Yeah.
Yeah. See if it's one ticket in a week or if it's five tickets a night. Because if it's five tickets a night, that's five people that would have seen Luke.
Yes.
And that five people that would have told people that Luke was great. Or they're going to see Jerry's show and say, you know, Jerry was either great or not, whatever they're going to do. And let's say that they don't like Jerry. Now they're putting Anthony. They loved Anthony, didn't like Jerry. You know, they're like, that gives sours him for on Anthony. You know, I would just do my research. I would, if someone actually said that, check. Find out. See how true it is. I mean, hey, Vegas is a small town, 10 to 1. You know, Anthony Cools knows somebody that works at that box office or knows somebody that knows somebody that works at that box office. Find out. What it is?
Well, you know, the funniest thing is
true. Change the name, just even like call it Luke Germain's Mental.
Yeah, you know? And that's the thing is you know, magic, especially in Vegas, is such a tiny community. You know, Jerry, who I like. I mean, Jerry, I like Luke and Jerry, to be, you know, perfectly honest. I think they've both been really, really nice to the site. They both you know, seem like really, really nice guys. You know, personally. And I've always enjoyed talking to him, but, you know, it's such a tiny community that, you know, the night before that I do this interview with Jerry, you know, they were both at the Eric Mead lecture. I mean, everybody knows everybody. Everybody sees everybody. Everybody, you know, and everybody has long memories. It just kind of seems like, you know, it's just an absolute shame that something has to come down to this. You know, it's got to be, you know, an issue like this.
You know, it kind of boils down to... Honestly, I mean, maybe I don't, again, I hate saying this, not knowing, but because maybe Jerry called Anthony and said, if he did, the very first thing it got mentioned was on your podcast.
No.
Jerry actually call Anthony and tell him?
Well, as it's told by Jerry, so if we were to take him at his word, which I am inclined to do, Luke called Jerry and said, hey, I'm doing a show. I really hope we can still be friends because they were friendly before. You know, I really hope that we can still be cool. And Jerry says, okay, that's totally fine. He's like, I'm going to name it Mental. And Jerry's like, well, now we have a problem because I think this, that, and the other, you should call it something that isn't. And his specific issue is that in the listings, that if you're looking down of all the Vegas shows alphabetically, it's Mental and Mentalist. And that's confusing to people. And so there was a time before all the posters were printed and all the taxi stands got put up and the billboards were purchased that Jerry made it known that this is going to be confusing and weird.
Well, yeah, I don't know what to say because it's one of those things where you know, you mentioned, I don't want to say that it's a mistake to call it mental, but it's a risk that they're taking. They know, they knew his show was called The Mentalist.
Yes.
You know, yes. And I don't think, you know, it's not like, you know, nothing against Jerry, but it's not like Jerry's show is, you know, in a 10,000 seat room selling out every night, and they're just going to use the fact that maybe someone would get confused and come to their show. It's not like that. So they had to know it was a close name, and they took that chance. And if it becomes an issue, then it's an issue, and they just have to deal with it.
So you're saying even, like, you know, beyond whatever beef there may or may not be between Jerry and Luke and Anthony, it's a risk from Luke and Anthony's perspective to name it mental in the first place, knowing that there is something like that with such a close name to it.
Yeah, I mean, then they just have to deal with whatever happens, you know. Now, here's an interesting thing about Jerry. Let's say that people come to his show. I mean, like I said, is it 10 people? Is it 2 people? Is it 100 people? How many people are coming with their ticket? No. In all reality, if somebody comes in with 4 tickets to see Jerry's show once a night.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were Jerry, I would have said nothing. Given the people
honor the discount.
Honor the discount and have him to his show. Now he can, you know.
Well, he did say that he honors the discount to a point. Like, I think, like, the base ticket price he charges is still the same, but it's like a 1 drink minimum or something. Like, I don't know.
Okay, well, he can, you know, I just think it's a, they picked the name, they knew it was close. You know, if they have to deal with a little bit and reevaluate and call it, you know, Luke Jermaine's mental, I don't think it's going to end up being a big deal. And in the long run, you know, someone will probably change the name. I'm assuming they'll probably do something to keep the shows so they can tell which one's which.
Yeah, and you know, it's hard because, like you said, like, hey, if it's 1 person a week or 4 person people a night in a room as, you know, I haven't seen the theater that Luke's in, but from as it's been described to me, it's not a massive venue, and you know that, you know, if it's 1 person a week or 4 people a night, it's, you know, 1 person to 4 people that, you know, could be in that theater, which in a smaller room definitely means a lot.
Right.
I'll tell you, and like, hopefully we'll have a response from Luke on the site. I know he called me Friday, and we played kind of phone tag. So hopefully we'll have, you know, something from him on the site this week.
In the long run, I think Luke's going to do great out there. He's really great, and he is doing some, like, serious hardcore mental stuff. I mean, he's doing some great stuff, and you know, every single day he's getting better and better and better and learning. He's always been good, but it's just like, you know, he is kind of...
You got to be Vegas good.
It's not about good, right. It's not about good. It's about understanding Vegas versus, like, here. Like, for example, we are performing. David is... we're touring the United States right now.
Yeah.
So it's a completely different crowd and a completely different mental attitude from David to perform here than to perform in Las Vegas. It's a totally different mindset. Now... David's mindset base is going to be different from Jerry's or Luke's, because we get foreigners more so, you know, in Vegas.
Yeah.
Than we do people from America. You know, we get, I'd say more than half of our audience in Vegas is from Japan, China, Germany, because they know David. People come to Vegas. They say, let's go see a show. Should we see this guy? I say, I don't know this name. Don't know this name. Don't know this name. Don't know this name. Never heard of that guy. Never heard of that guy. Wait, David Copperfield.
Yeah.
So they'll go see David. So, you know, we get a lot of foreigners. And then a lot of people from the States know that we're going to tour through, and they think, well, I could see David, but I can go see, you know, this. I'll see David when he comes into town. So we get a lot of, you know, such a mixture in Vegas. So we're different. But for Luke, you know, it's a different crowd than he's used to probably. But, you know, Luke's very adaptive, and he's a smart guy. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's the only thing. I love talking to, like, you and Emily Burton, like, when it comes to just putting on a show in terms of, like, hey, how do you, you know, this is a business, right? Like, you know, this is, it's a matter of getting the word out and selling tickets and understanding what sells tickets. And, you know, really the show in a lot of ways and the talent needs to get out of its own way to make sure that you're making really smart, sound business decisions to keep the, keep everything rolling.
Yeah, being good is only one part of it.
Yeah.
Having a good product is only one part of it. I mean, how many things have you seen that you can purchase that you go like, wow, how come everybody doesn't have one of these? Half the time it's because people don't know how to advertise the product. They don't know how to sell it. They don't know how to get it out there, how to get people to know about it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, yeah, hopefully we'll have a thing from Luke, hopefully, on iTrix this week. Make sure that you guys check it out. Now, last week on the podcast, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we talked a little bit about why boxers seem to have this affinity for magic, that the Klitschko brothers, Muhammad Ali, I think it was Roy Jones Jr. was the news peg that we talked about this initially. And we got a interesting theory from Michael Locke of the Apricot Pocus DVD series, the Magic DVD magazine. He writes, personally, and I'm serious about this, I refer to people being interested in magic in the martial arts as Batman syndrome. Sure, it might simply be an attraction to the traditions attached to it, but I think for many, and I'll admit to this, there's a desire to be something special, and since we weren't born on Krypton and no one seems to be handing out Green Lantern Corps rings, we have to go the way of Bruce Wayne. Ever notice how many magicians dig comics? So, what do you think, Chris? Is there some,
Well, first off, I think that was one of the nerdiest statements I've ever heard in my life.
I know, and that's saying something on a magic podcast.
That's not a bad way, because I mean, I'm a giant nerd, so.
Oh, yeah. We are all amongst friends here when it comes to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's probably part of it. You know, I don't think that a lot of people are into magic necessarily for the love of gadgets, the love of, it's more about, and I have said this before, and I just really, it's one of those little pet peeves of mine. You know, I unfortunately think a lot of people get into magic because they don't have a personality. Magic becomes their personality. I was just talking to, I just talked to a kid just yesterday, was at the show, and he said, he was talking to somebody in the audience and, said he was a magician. And the person asked him to do a trick. So here he's in the audience doing a trick for this guy.
Yeah.
And then I came up and I was talking to him. He goes, yeah, I was doing a trick for this guy. And then somebody saw me, so I did a trick for that person. And he goes, you must know how it is when people find out you're a magician. And I just looked at him and I said, I have no idea what that's like because I don't do it.
Yeah.
My personality is not doing a magic trick and being the guy. I'm the magician. Oh, this is my friend, Jim. Jim's a magician. And that's how you're introduced. And then that's what you are.
Yeah.
And that's what you are to all your friends. It's kind of like weird that you end up.
Well, again, and I think what you're saying is that it's kind of a double-edged sword because number one, you have this immediate, hook to people that all of a sudden, if it's rare that you just put six people in a room and then all of a sudden everybody goes to the one person and engages them at all, right? You have to have a little something to you. So that is a benefit of being known as the magic guy. But the problem is that, you're in that box. And if you only rely on that for the reason why somebody walks to you in a crowded room, then I think obviously we've all met them in this industry, but there are some people that never really grow out of that.
Well, I think the boxer thing, I think that if you look at, there are tons of people in the movie industry that played around with magic.
Yeah.
There are tons of people there's CEOs of companies that loved and played around with magic. You can look at every single thing and find people that are interested in magic at one point or another in their life because it's kind of so I want to say phase, but it's kind of a thing that a lot of people, kind of show an interest in at some point or another.
So you're saying that it might not necessarily be a boxing thing. It's just that it really just spreads kind of evenly across so many demographics that it's just kind of cool to point out the boxer thing because you wouldn't necessarily immediately connect the dots between boxing and magic.
Right. I mean, I can name, there's quite a few people in the military that are into magic. There's, quite a few people, General Schwarzkopf was a giant magic fan.
Oh, right. I didn't know that.
Yeah, big time. There's Michael Cera, there's magicians in Hollywood, like everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, there's people in Hollywood that have toyed around with magic. And the thing is let's say that you're a boxer or that you're an actor or a lighting designer, you know, whatever you are in your chosen field of entertainment or in anything. You know, if that's, even if at some point in your life you just always kind of liked magic or thought of it as a cool thing, a lot of people do that, you know, a lot.
All right.
And these guys just, but once they become the actor, hey, that's going to become more important than the magic, obviously. And
yes.
Then once they become the lighting designer, or the director, or whatever, or the boxer.
That's the main thing.
Right. That becomes their main thing. But people having an interest in magic goes, you know, you can almost go into any, you know, office building and find a couple of people that have some sort of interest in magic. And at some point, you can go, hey, have you ever heard of this guy? You know, did you know who Michael Amar was? Did you know? You know, you almost use Michael Amar as the common thread name because he's been, you know, around and well known and as of selling, you know, tricks all the way from the beginner level to, you know, a very complicated level. So he's a good, you know, parameter.
I like to use the icebreaker. Do you read itricks.com?
Yeah, there you go.
Click on the ad, suckers. all right, we got a few corrections in for the show. I loved last week's episode. Apparently I screwed up enough that we had to just have the corrections pour in, like the end of Pardon the Interruption. Matt Lavore wrote in, Blaine did not make his goal time during the Frozen in Time special. He made it to 63 hours, 40 minutes, and 15 seconds. His goal time was 72 hours. He came out early. And the record Blaine broke on the Oprah show was not the same record that he tried to beat on Drowned Alive. On Oprah, Blaine broke the record for oxygen-assisted static apnea. The failed Drowned Alive attempt was to break the record for unassisted static apnea. And then Tommy Pickles wrote in, the World Magic Awards is broadcast on My Network TV and is not affiliated with the Disney family. Owner of My TV is Fox Broadcasting Company, a.k.a. News Corp, which I think it's a little bit more complicated. I think it's partially owned by Fox, but also by the CBS company. Oh, no, that was the CW, rather. No, yeah, no, My TV is Fox, rather. But I don't remember saying that it was not on, the World Magic Awards was not on My TV. But if I did, then my mistake. Thank you to everybody for writing in. Again, it is show at itricks.com, or just comment on the post on iTricks when this goes up. But Chris, you mentioned earlier the iPhone app. I know you've talked in the past on some of our live chats and stuff that you got a new one coming out. What's the deal with that?
I have two of them, two new ones. And I've got another idea for another fourth one. So it's just the second and the third, and I have another fourth idea. The one, like I said, I'm just kind of holding the text message trick. I'm just kind of holding off on it until basically, you know, Penn and Teller, you know, they have their day with theirs, and then I'll put mine out because I don't want to put it out and be in any like direct immediate competition with them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like once theirs is kind of like the majority of the people that are going to buy it have bought it, and then, you know, I'll throw mine out there and we'll see what happens. Unfortunately, I mean, I'm sure I'll get people say, you know, oh, look at this, he ripped off them, or he's doing the same idea. I had this trick finished done in the can before I think that they even thought about doing a text message trick or an iPhone trick. So, you know, I'm sure I'll hear it, but you know, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm just trying to have, you know, do the right
thing. Do cool stuff, right?
Well, yeah. The whole thing is a fun project. You know, I can't believe that the Rising Card has done as well as it has.
Yeah, it's balling. It's going crazy.
I can't believe it. So, you know, it's pretty. I was in the right place at the right time with that too. That was kind of a lucky, and we did all the right advertising and all the right, you know, all the right press.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say, by advertising, do you mean be at the cusp of a media firestorm about Apple's approval process in general?
Yeah, and then we were on the day after they put out the new iTunes. We were in the iTunes store for 2 weeks. Or 2.5 weeks, whatever it was, as of what's hot. And then, you know, have all that stuff in the, I was in the member in the New York Times, CNN, Wall Street Journal, everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You guys definitely were the beneficiaries of a lot of really, really good press. So let me ask you this, though. The reason why that press was swirling around your last app was because it spent so much time in approval purgatory for, and you guys can go back and read specifically, the technical issues with the first one and why Apple was hesitant to approve it and eventually kind of had to give you guys a special exemption. Do you anticipate a similar problem with the new one?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm pushing the boundaries further with this new one. I think it'll be an easier process now for us because we have, I can go straight to the top two to get it approved by. I don't have to go through and just put it to the general approval and say, I have to wait. So we are going to go when the time is right. We'll go straight to what we need to and say, hey, what are my problems? What do I need to do? And whatever you don't like, let me explain why it's the way it is. But I think the key for this one will be just like the last one. Once they put it on their phone and try it, they'll realize what it is. It's not this thing where I'm trying to fake out the user.
Now, what is there any? I guess temptation would be the right word to consult with your people at Apple in the, in the process of building this application to ask them. Sort of while you're making these initial decisions on what you want to do, whether this would be kosher or this wouldn't, or do you just submit it to them and say, hey, let's just cut and dice what you don't like?
I would rather, in this case, and this isn't always necessarily the case, but for me, for this case, because I can always cut back, I would rather go for the gusto and not be told, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, and then basically cheapen my idea. Before I even had a chance to, I wanted to make it as good as I could make it the best thing that it could be.
Yeah.
And I've put a lot of thought into this. The next two things coming out, I think they're both way better tricks than the Rising Guard as a tricks go. And very clever methods are, no one's even touched on this next method, I think. So it's, I'm using another thing with the phone that hasn't quite been, Apple's, I don't think they're not going to like it for sure. But if I were to ask them, are you going to like this? And they would just say no.
And then that'd be it. And then be like, why'd you submit it? We told you we hated this.
It's not why'd you submit it. Why did you even try? So I didn't want to stop. So I made it right now. I think it's the best that it can be for what it is. And I think we'll get it approved. I really honestly think that I understand the channels and how it works now, and I think that I can get it approved.
All right. Well, it certainly is a very interesting process, considering how many people are watching it, and sort of as Apple is, by in many ways the pressure of just people watching them, had to form some hard and fast rules about what they do and don't approve. It's always interesting to see where they come down on things like that. But I know anything that Chris Kenner has coming on the iPhone, I'm definitely excited about. All right. Of course, you're on Twitter at Chris Kenner, right?
Yeah.
Everybody should follow you.
I think it's a fun time. It's like I put more posts on Facebook. I don't really do Twitter as much. I try. Twitter's tough for me.
Well, you should have it like everybody else, and just have it go to both.
Well, the problem is things that I would put on Twitter, I wouldn't put on Facebook. They're not always the same. I mean, I would put the same, but when I tweet, I tweet more. In other words, I go through days where I'll talk, I'll go through Twitter every day, all day. Just go through, this is what's going on, this is annoying, this is that.
Yeah.
And the problem with, the thing with Facebook is if I say something on Facebook, I use Facebook like a blog. So if I want to talk about, something that bugs me, politics, whatever, religion, it doesn't matter to me, I'll put it up. And
yeah.
People don't like it, they're going to say something, and I can read it and respond. Where Twitter, I've got to go through, see, is it a mention, is it this, who said this? It's harder for me to visualize it all in one place. So that's why I like Facebook better. So,
all right, there we go. Well, then people can friend you on Facebook. Do you approve the friend request?
I pretty much approve everybody. I sometimes, if I don't know, if they have no mutual friends to me, I'll sometimes ask them how I know them and then go from there. But usually, I pretty much approve everybody.
I bought your Rising Card app, Mr. Kenner. Can I be a Facebook friend?
Of course they can.
There we go.
Because again, it's, to me, it's a blog.
All right. Well,
Tommy Wynn. Did we talk about Tommy Wynn?
We're just getting into this. As we mentioned at the top of the podcast, Tommy Wynn is rumored to open a new show at the Palazzo this Halloween. Wynn won this weekend the Teen Magician of the Year award at the World Magic Awards taping. He is a spry young man of 19 years of age, Mr. Kenner.
He doesn't look 19. He looks like he's like 25 or 30.
He looks a little older. Like, it was almost pretty weird that, you know, and I don't know, maybe he just has one of those faces that just reads not 19, but he definitely reads like kind of a full-grown man. But is 19 too young to open a Vegas show?
Well, I've known Tommy for years. I've known him and his family for years. You know, 19, how do you judge a show?
You're like, I've known Tommy for the last 20 years. The last 25 years, I've known 19-year-old Tommy Wynn.
I've known him for 30 years. 19. But I've known him for a couple of years. He's, you know, as happens to me a lot. People come to the show, come to David Copperfield's show, and, you know, I'll walk around out, and they'll say, hey, are you Chris? I mean, can I talk to you for a minute? And then I'd, you know, I try. If I have the time, I'll talk to anybody as long as I can. So, you know, I've talked to Tommy several times, and he's called me. I think I maybe met him in Atlantic City or maybe New Jersey. I can't remember where I actually met him. It's been quite a while.
Yeah.
And he's always had, you know, aspirations of doing great things. So, you know, I see that a lot. I get that a lot. I get that a lot. And saying that he's too young to have a show in Vegas, you know, I haven't seen Tommy's show, so I can't really, you know, judge that. So that's hard to say, but. Hey, if someone's if someone's good enough for a casino of that magnitude to say, oh, we're going to hire you and we're going to put you, we've seen you perform in Atlantic City, because I think he does do a show in Atlantic City. We've seen you, or at least your tape, and we're going to put you in our show. Let's at least say the casino thinks something about him. So, and honestly, in all reality, the casino would know more what they want than magicians. That's why you see magicians that you go, why would they be there? Why do they deserve a show like that? Because the casino is not necessarily walking around looking for the best manipulation act to put in their show, you know.
They want a guy that looks a certain way and that can appeal to a certain kind of guest, right?
They might say, hey, we want him to be in the lounge in between the such and such and such and such, and we need somebody that's young and hip and that's got a little bit of experience and will go for this kid. You know, maybe he at least, you know, he's got that look where, you know, he could be 19 or he could be 25. So maybe that's what they want. Who knows? You know, I hate to say that there's an age limit to having a show in Vegas. Is there an age limit to being a good actor?
No, but there certainly is a degree of difficulty to anything in life, especially anything creative. And it would, you know, certainly be said that when you're a little older and you've gone through various, you know, incarnations of something, you've maybe learned lessons in terms of perfecting your art, or maybe even getting it out there in a certain way that always has an audience react to it. It's easier slightly when you have more practice, right? Like
no,
anything
I
else.
I disagree.
You don't disagree. Okay.
The problem with that whole analogy about magic, it's like I hate it. It's like a BS, crappy, ridiculous analogy in a way. Because have you ever seen like some of these comedians that are 21, 20 years old that are really great and funny and headlining? There's a couple of them out there.
Yeah.
There's a couple of young guys running around. And comedy is harder than magic.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I think it's harder to do that kind of a thing. And there, sometimes people are going to be it's going to be okay for someone who's going to be naturally has the ability to either be a magician, a comedian, an actor, whatever it can be. You know, it's like in a way we wouldn't have children actors if they had to have experience.
True. You can say that either you have it or you don't. But Dave Chappelle's act at 19 is not as good as his act at 25, is what I'm saying.
No, it's not. But if he would have waited till he was 25, he wouldn't have the experience that he had at 25.
No, you're right.
He's taking. There are guys out there that, you know, started when they were really young and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and did shows. Not necessarily, let's say, as comedians. They traveled, they toured, they were middle acts, they were whatever, they were very young. And that's where they got their experience. Like, I'm not saying there's no real place for him to go out and get, for Tommy to go out and get experience necessarily. He's actually performed. I'm not trying to say that stick up for him, but he's actually performed, I think, in Atlantic City quite a bit.
Yeah.
So maybe the casino sees something in him that the magic world's not going to see. You know, and the magic world will always say that a young person doesn't deserve it. Because
The magic world will always say that everybody doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, that's true. True, too. But, you know, the magic community tends to say, oh, they don't deserve it. They don't have the experience. They don't have the this. And you know, what's interesting to me is I know guys that are 40, and they're well-known magicians. Okay?
Okay.
And they have respect from magicians. They have respect from the magic community. They have respect as performers.
Yes.
But there are... But I could safely say that I know people that by the time they were 20 have performed more and been on more stages and done more shows than this person has at 40. Who has the experience?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a very, very good point. So,
you know, I mean, let's take a guy who does a manipulation act, and he works at the castle every once in a while, and everybody thinks he's great, and he deserves this, and he does a couple of magic conventions, and he does a paid show every couple of months, and he does some Christmas shows. And then you get some kid who's up, can't wait to perform, wants to perform, will do anything, and he's 16 or 17. He's out there performing everywhere he can. He's doing every show he can. He's learning every day. He's trying. And then by the time he's 19, he's got like a regular gig at Six Flags.
Yeah.
He's going to have more experience than these old timers. Like, look at Lance. Lance Burton, you know, he was really young when he was working at Tombstone Territory, or wherever it was called, in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And doing his act, the act that he's made him famous.
And it's just a matter of getting out there. So, I mean, so Tommy, when no matter what, I mean, like, obviously. It'd be, you know, maybe not safe to say that this is going to be, you know, the best show he'll ever put on of the Palazzo, but he's out there and he, you know, no matter what.
Oh, you know, here, the reality of it is this. Hey, you put yourself in that kind of situation at the Palazzo, and if he's in the theater, you're going to make it or you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt. It's not like, you know, even if you give away free tickets, people have to still show up.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that easy. And, you know, Vegas is a pretty tough town. So, you know, the one thing that I wish, and I'm not saying that Tommy's going to have this problem, but one thing I have seen happen with a lot of these young guys, like I said, I've known tons of them. I can rattle off their names. I don't really want to, but I could name all these different guys that I have known since they were kids. Some of them since they were 12, 13 years old, and now they're in their 20s. Like, I know a kid, I have a photograph of me, Jim, and Don Lane, and someone else, I can't remember. And it was, this kid was, I think, 10?
Okay.
10 maybe?
Okay.
So he's in his late 20s now.
Okay.
And he, I've known him since that day. And over the years, he said, you know, oh, I want to be this, I've got this, I won this award, and I'm trying to get into this, and I just won this contest, and I want to do this, and his parents kept telling me he's going to be the greatest, and he's going to be the best, and he's going to do this, he's going to do that, you know, and he's barely working now, I think he's got a regular job, but he's, the point is kind of, I hear so many people say, you know, They say they're famous or important before they are. And I see that's kind of that, it's more in the illusion kind of scenario, but I hear that. So, or you know, I want to do a Vegas show. You know, I know another guy who's from Vegas. He's been telling me that he's very clever and extremely talented. I want to do a Vegas show. I want a show. But it's got to be, I want my own theater. I want my own, like it's a dream. You'll never get that. I said, you know, start small. Just do something. Go out there and do a, you know, do a free show in the afternoon and just to get yourself, you know, in front of people.
Just know what the hell the score is. Know what you're doing.
You know, work at a magic shop in the day and a little thing at night. So anything you can do. Do 5 minutes in a show. Opening act. If you're trying to be a comedian, if you're telling me that you're working on a comedy act, And my question to you is, have you gone to open mic night? And you say no, then you're not working on a comedy act. You're not taking it that serious. I hear it all the time, all the time. Oh, I'm working on this new bit. These new comedy things are funny. They're going to be great. I can't wait to try it in my show. Well, go try it at open mic night.
Yeah. See what kind of reaction it gets.
You know, do you really have confidence in it? Is it really going to be good? Who is it? Is it really for regular people? Or are you just going to perform for magicians the rest of your life?
Yeah. Well, there's the age-old question. All right. Hey, listen, Chris, it is always a pleasure to have you on. You know, I definitely always appreciate your perspective on things. Any last, way that people get in touch with you or people who can find out more information? I know Theory 11, obviously, you have all your one-on-ones and everything up there.
Yeah. You can. Theory 11, obviously, is a place. I'm not on the forums as much on Theory 11. Best place to get me is Facebook. You know, I think it's kind of like an outlet for me. So
there we go. And occasionally in the frequency, right? Our eye tricks.
That's also, I run in phases with that. It's about time. If I have the time.
Yeah.
You know, when the show's in Vegas, it's easy for me to do it because it's during the show. I'm just sitting backstage and sometimes bored to death. So I can jump over there. But when I'm on the road, I really need to be ready for problems or issues or anything, you know, because my problems on the road are everything from the bus drivers to the catering. You know, I have people that deal with each thing, but if there's any major issue, I have to immediately deal with it. So it's tougher.
And of course, best of luck. Time is ticking with your lovely wife. She's going to give birth to your child. So best.
I know. I can't
best
wait.
Of luck there.
For that, I am the most excited of anything ever. That'll be the best trick, best gift, best anything ever.
Well, you guys are what? You're within, if not within a month, awfully close, right?
Let's see. What's the date today?
The 12th. Yeah.
It's we're a little month and a half almost.
Holy smokes!
A little less than that, actually, like 5 weeks. Basically,
I know.
I'm going to go home from tour, and she's going to have a baby. Okay.
There you go. There you go, and hopefully, it goes in that order.
She's good though, so.
Oh, she's the best. She's the best. And of course, you know, Katie Kenner on Twitter, and
she's always on Twitter.
Yeah, she is. She is. I'll tell you what. If you ever wanted to get into the mind of a woman in the third trimester of pregnancy, and you know, everything that goes along with it, there you go. Follow her Twitter because it is happening live and direct for you every day.
She doesn't hold back.
No, I know, and that's what makes her awesome. All right. Thank you very, very much, Chris.
You got it.
All right. If you guys would like to fire back on anything you hear, it is show@itricks.com. I am Justin Robert Young, editor of itricks.com. Justin R. Young on Twitter. Until next week, bang a gong.
itricks.com.